Welcome to Podcast on Fire Network bonus episode 27 on Sabu's Shazuke's Journey. We hinted at it being announced, the movie that is, and also being completed by the time we capped off our series on Japanese filmmaker Sabu. And since it has arrived now on English subtitled DVD and Blu-ray, I thought we'd watch and review his 2015 fantasy, comedy, drama, goofy time. Oh boy, there's a lot of movie here. And it's called Shazuke's Journey. And my name is Kenny B, and with me to review the movie in this website-exclusive bonus episode is V-Cinema's Coffin John. Good morning and hi, buddy.
Good morning.
Welcome back to the world of Sabu.
Yes, it's been a while. Well, it's been a while since we've recorded anything, to be honest.
But yeah, but we're sort of in the thick of Gosha territory now. Old-time cinema, not 2015 Japanese cinema. But we're not planning to, you know, go back to recording booth every time Sabu does a movie. But we mentioned this quite firmly at the beginning of the series and at the end of the series once it was completed. I think we recorded almost on the day it premiered in Japan 1 year ago. So I thought it's been talked of enough. So I thought we'd get together again. So let's talk a bit. It's from 2015, and the plot goes as follows from IMDb. A fantasy love story that drifts between this world and heaven. Shazuke, played by Kenichi Matsuyama from Death Note and Sabu's prior movie Bunny Drop, he's in charge of making tea in heaven. He has feelings for a woman named Yuri, played by Ito Ono, whom he has seen from a writer who is scripting her life from heaven. He knows that Yuri is condemned to die in a car accident, though. To save the woman, Shazuke goes down to this world, to Earth. So, let's get into it. Short and brief, that means the same thing. But a bite-sized opinion for now, John. What did you think of Shazuke's Journey?
I thought it had some really interesting elements to it. You know, last year when we talked about it, I remember both of us, we looked at the trailer and kind of thought it looked sort of interesting, but didn't necessarily look like a Sabu film.
Hard to take the pulse of the movie based on that trailer, I remember, yeah.
But it just wasn't one of those things that, I mean, it was more fantasy-oriented, you know, there was no Yakuza or any crazy salaryman that we had seen in his earlier films.
And seemingly no running either.
Exactly. So, you know, there was some question as to, you know, well, you know, what kind of film was this going to be exactly? So, in the end, I think it's okay. It's not one of his better films, I would say. I think it's somewhere like in the middle, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, it has some good moments, has some very trademark Sabu moments as far as, you know, action and characters and as well as exposition goes. So, you know, in the end, I wouldn't say it's one of his better films, like I mentioned, but I thought it was, you know, it was just okay.
Yeah, I sort of agree. I mean, again, it's a lot of Sabu movie in one, which I'm used to by now. We've seen movies that Monday, which is my favorite, that is a lot of Sabu movie in one, a lot of movies in one, a lot of moods. So, but it's been more successful in the past, this packed sort of amusement park ride. But a fair amount of the parts amuses here, and the quite full platter might mean something super serious or might not mean something super serious according to Sabu himself. And I seem to remember this might have been based on something he wrote before, like a novel or a short story or something like that. I think you dug up that info.
Right, I do kind of remember that, yes. Mm-hmm.
It doesn't stick with you, and it's not a new chapter for him either necessarily, but, you know, he did try fantasy in this one. That's sort of new, and so yeah, not great, not bad. We've also touched upon both times we discussed this movie, both at the top of the Sabu series and at the end of the Sabu series, that this was to be produced under the banner of Office Kitano, which is indeed Takeshi Kitano's production house. I wanted to ask, does this fit the sort of movies that comes out of the production house, or is this a way more mainstream movie that comes out of Office Kitano? What do you know about the output that comes out of the house?
Well, yeah, Office Kitano, as you mentioned, just so everyone knows, it's the production company of Beat Takeshi, as well as other investors. And for the most part, they have produced probably most, not all, but most of Beat Takeshi's films, at least since Hanabi, maybe even farther back than.
Yeah, I wasn't sure when they were founded because I don't remember distinctly back to Sonatine or whatever that the name of his katana appeared on screen. But been around, Hanabi was like 97 or whatever, so going on 20 years.
Mm-hmm. Even longer than that, I think, because now that I think of it, and I say this because the Blu-ray is coming up pretty soon, but A Scene at the Sea, which is his early 90s film, I do remember that having an office katana card in the beginning of the film. So, I mean, so we're running on how many years is that now? So, you know, a lot. So 25 years, right?
So certainly his style of movies comes out of the production house because he makes those types of movies. But what other movies comes out of Office Kitano if you look back 10, 15 years or whatever?
So again, like I would say about maybe around half of their films end up being Beat Takeshi films. And then there are some films that are Beat Takeshi related. So for example, the recent sequel of sorts, I say of sorts because I haven't seen it yet, of the film, his film Kids Return, which was just produced in, I think it was 2013. He didn't direct that, but he certainly, of course, produced that, being that the original Kids Return was his film. And then there were other films like Chicken Heart, which was directed by, if I remember correctly, Hiroshi Shimizu, who was Beat Takeshi's assistant director in a lot of his earlier films, such as Hanabi.
Taking a step up the ladder, that's always nice to hear when someone starts out in one position and then goes to full director.
Of course, the funny thing is, like, I did a little research on Hiroshi Shimizu, and I see that he hasn't really done very much since that time, so I don't know exactly what happened.
You failed!
And yeah, maybe some personal stuff or whatever. And then, you know, there's some other things. They've done some reaching out, some international productions. They recently did, they co-produced A Touch of Sin, which was filmed by Zhang Keijia, the Chinese filmmaker. I'm not too sure exactly what their involvement was, if it was just financial or if it was like, you know, actual, you know, pure production from production standpoint, you know, exactly their involvement was. Also, they produced Izo, which was Takeshi Miike's film, 2004. That's the, we referenced that actually last episode when we were talking about.
Oh, yeah, connected to Hitokiri in some shape or form, yeah.
Right. It's the same story based on the same samurai. Yeah, but for the most part, like I said, mostly Beat Takeshi's films. Now, as far as Chasuke's journey is concerned, well, it's kind of interesting because, like I said, Sabu is not really related to Beat Takeshi. Maybe they're friends in some way. I'm not really too sure. I'm assuming maybe this is like a Touch of Sin, you know, maybe just an indication that they want to work more with filmmakers who produce films that are sort of in their vein. But with that said, like I mentioned, you know, Chasuke's journey really is not, to me, feels more like a Sabu film rather than, let's say, a Beat Takeshi film. And again, you know, we don't know what the exact involvement is. It could just be a financial relationship.
Sure.
In which case, you know, there would not need to be any creative or otherwise input from the company itself. So
yeah, I didn't spot Beat Takeshi in the making of peering over Sabu's shoulder during action cut or anything. So you might be onto something there indeed.
Yeah, so you know, my guess is they were just, you know, purely there in that production capacity. But as far as the films fitting into, you know, what Office Kitano is about, well, it's kind of hard to say. I would say that, you know, Office Kitano really is about, you know, making films that they believe in. Maybe, of course, films that probably can make some money. Obviously, not that Beat Takeshi needs money because he's probably one of the more wealthy men in Japan right now, or at least wealthy entertainers in Japan for sure. Because he's got his hands in all kinds of things.
But yeah, so that's the sort of context for how it might or might not fit in, depending on the viewer you are. You might think this is a piss stain on the Office Kitano sort of resume, depending on the viewer you are. But regardless, that's context. Let's get into the movie a little bit. Initially, Sabu shoots his best tea commercial. You know, it's very yellow in heaven. You're in very warm and smoky, and everything moves in slow motion. So this is a grand tea commercial. That's nice. That tea, I don't know what's in it, but I want some tea. As Kenichi Matsuyama start to serve all the writers, and he has a big, like, obviously a quirky scenario being set up here of all these writers off or in heaven. You know, God is not writing our fates. Nope, he farms out that work to writers.
Right, they're called screenwriters, actually, too. Sabu's probably taking a little shot at his contemporaries as far as, you know, his idea of how creative screenwriters really are, because it's more like, I guess you'd say, like a sweatshop sort of atmosphere that they're working
in. It's a stressful writer's room, essentially, and that it's never ending as well. So heaven faces challenges of retelling the same story, which is a lot of, there's a lot of amusement here in the idea, and they never say God in this movie. They call him the man. So the man is sweeps in at one point, looks like a dragon or something, and delivers the message, Avant God, you know, a sort of hint of how we should now write. So the man is arty and pretentious, therefore. Which so I think the initial setup of this being a rather stressful writer's room, and it never seems that they are able to complete and contemplate the work, because it's always work. Like when they roll up the whole parchment, a new parchment comes out and they have to get to work again. The movie sort of talks of, maybe seriously, probably not serious, that you don't need to have the perfect life to have a good life. You know, these persons in heaven don't need to write the perfect stories for humans to end up in a good place, necessarily. They write stories about rejection, you know, romantic rejection, which might not be a bad thing. You might learn from experiences along the way, so no need to write the perfect story from page one. That might be in there. So I'm not going to call if it actually is serious. And if it is serious, it's not very emotionally affecting as such. There's a lot of little hints, as you said. There might be some little satirical nods, or little pokes at screenwriters overdoing it, trying too hard. Mm-hmm. And because all those recaps of that Chasuke tells of, oh, this is Joe, he went through this and this and this, all of that is totally overwritten. Because they've gone through developments akin to 3 or 4 lifetimes. You know, he started as a soccer player, he went into this, then that happened, and that happened, and that happened, and now he's here.
Well, right. In a sense, you kind of get the idea that these screenwriters in heaven, that they've written so many of these stories that they've become a formula. Because of that, you know, there's this need to create something that's different every time, like a little, like create something that has your own little spin on it. And so that, I guess that's where, you know, the big conflict comes in of, yeah. And I think actually Sabu is probably not only, you know, maybe jabbing a little bit at his peers, but he's probably jabbing a little bit at himself too.
He's been busy in movies before. He's certainly busy in this one, but mm-hmm. I mean, just think back on Monday. That starts at one point and ends up at another, and we're not sure if any of it meant anything. But there's a lot of movie in that one.
Too. Right. And you almost get the sense, at least I got the sense sometimes in Monday, that, you know, he took the story in a particular direction just because he could, rather than just because it made sense, you know. So I think in a way, yeah, he's sort of looking at himself and saying, like, you know.
And in heaven, they're allowed as well to do this. And right. Sabu seemingly has been allowed to have playtime in a couple of movies, Monday probably being the prime example, along with Postman Blues. Like, yep, you're free to do whatever you want. It's cool.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Did this tickle you at all? Did you identify it as like quirky and funny, this whole heaven set up, stressful writer's room, set up the busy scripts for one particular human type of setup, because I'm not sure it doesn't play as super wacky and comedic. For me, it's sort of, it's there, the scenario tickled me. But how did you feel?
Well, I like that as a setup for the premise of the film itself. You know, I think it's a really interesting idea, because, you know, obviously, you know, the fact that, you know, all of our lives are being, you know, scripted by these screenwriters up in heaven, you know, that's kind of an interesting something that Sabu has really touched on as far as, you know, fate and destiny. You know, do you actually have control over what you do, or is there someone writing the story for you? You know, he's touched on that in some of his earlier films. I think it's kind of interesting because the final comment on, you know, on fate and destiny is actually very different from a lot of his earlier films, where, you know, you get the sense that, well, no one really can escape their fate, that, you know, you, the journey that you're taking is one that's scripted for you. Whereas this film, you know, has a very distinct, different feel to it. In fact, it's, the character says it's, you know, straight out. It's the last line in the script, actually, in the film itself, you know, where he sort of states, you know, you have to write your own story in life, you know, which is kind of interesting because it's very, I felt that very, being very different from the message that Sabu had in earlier films. And I'm not too sure what you can attribute that to, whether, you know, that's just Sabu, you know, just playing with the idea, or if it's something that's kind of interesting is that, you know, in the interim, in real life, in Sabu's real life, he's moved from, I believe he was living in Tokyo when he was making his earlier films, and he's moved to Okinawa since then. And as far as I know, he's been living there for about 3, 4, 5 years. So you kind of wonder if that change of scenery, you know, Okinawa is a very tropical island, basically. It's kind of like, I guess, you know, something like Hawaii or Guam or something like that.
So the last scene could have been in Okinawa, the beach setting?
Oh, no, the whole film is set in Okinawa. I mean, gotcha. it's just, to me, it's just reeking of Okinawa. I mean, it's the music, the dancing, the settings, yeah, everything. I mean, I've never been to Okinawa, but I've seen it enough, and I know enough about its the culture where, you know, I was like, okay, this is really Okinawa. This is not anywhere else. But what I was trying to get at is that you kind of wonder if the change of setting, you know, caused this sort of change of heart or change of mind in Sabu as far as his thinking goes. You know, maybe, you know, when he was living in Tokyo, he felt a lot more confined and a little more tense about, you know, what life was really about, what life really is about, and, you know, these thoughts of, you know, again, destiny and fate and whatnot. And, you know, now that he's in Okinawa, which is, you know, much more laid back, much more relaxed atmosphere, you know, you kind of wonder if that somehow changed his way of thinking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly. And then I think a lot of it is up to each viewer as well, because he's not spelling it out necessarily exactly this is how you should interpret my movie, because there's always a playfulness to his movies, unless it's a movie like Bunny Drop that really is like devoid of a quirky nature. It's an adaptation, so it's a very straight sort of thing. He has to adhere to a story structure established before, and not a story structure that he established tittering to himself as he does that very thing.
Well, you know, in Chasuke, as I mentioned, you know, basically the last line spoken in the film is, you know, again, basically the theme of the film, I guess you could say, you know, the overriding theme of the film, you know, to, you know, write your own story. But, you know, even though he does say that clearly, there is a sort of sense of, you almost feel a little bit of a, of course it doesn't come through in the subtitles, but at least in the Japanese, you almost feel a little wink.
Yeah, I sort of got that, because the dialogue isn't sappy necessarily. Like, as Kenichi Matsuyama reads it, it's sort of like, shrugs and this is what it is, kind of. So here we go, bye, the end. Speaking of Matsuyama, or Chaz, as he doesn't get his full name out initially, so people say Chaz, that's a funny name, and they even think Chasuke apparently sounds funny. In the subtitles they say, oh, you mean it means that? No, you mean it means that. So it seems like that name can mean a couple of things.
Maybe it doesn't make it too clear in the film that that's not a real name, so to speak. If anything, that would be the name of like a job. You know, Chasuke, the two kanji are, cha is a tea, and ske means like helper.
Right. There you go. The tea server, tea helper, tea boy, right. Maybe. We watched him in Bunny Drop. Bunny Drop was about 5 or 6 years before this. Kenichi Matsuyama, that is. I'm still not sold on him as a big, broad comedic actor. I'm more sold on him when he gets to reel in and react in a little bit more subtle way. I didn't really like it in Bunny Drop, these huge, almost anime-style reactions to certain situations in Bunny Drop. There are a couple of things here that he doesn't really have a grasp of that, I think, going really over the top. But I like most of his performance here. I'm not seeing a great actor in development here necessarily, but I like sort of how the angel, Mr. Angel, as they call him, because he becomes this miracle healer at a third into the movie. That's not a spoiler. So I like where he sort of in a non-verbal way has to keep up with the story that he knows has been scripted in heaven, and see, okay, the cues that goes on around him in his quest to save Yuri. So that he has a nice grasp of, and a couple of comedic beats are quite good as well. At one point he starts talking like a Yakuza. He grasps his own mouth because he wasn't ready for that sort of tough talk to come out of him. And I think, okay, there's your sort of comedic style that can work for you. He's a decent lead and all of that, but I'm not seeing him as this future of wacky anime style comedy in live action movies necessarily, or the greatest thespian like that Japan is going to be talking of for decades and decades. He's serviceable, but I'm not seeing a great development based on what I saw in Bunny Drop, which I liked when he played it when it was a regular story about this.
Right. Yeah, I think the value of Matsuyama as an actor is when he is playing an everyman, in my opinion. I don't think he's really good. I don't even really think he's that great as a romantic lead, to be honest. I don't know, women might feel differently or whatever romantic... Or any kind of person who would have some romantic interest in might feel differently. But I just kind of feel like he's a good, like, everyman. I don't really think of him very much as a comedic actor myself either. I don't think he's particularly well trained in that side of acting. But
was Death Note the better showcase, therefore?
He was just okay in that. It's kind of difficult. He's one of those actors who he's high enough profile where I think his real life image sort of intrudes a little bit on his acting, because, like I said, even as an everyman, you know, I sort of look at him and say, well, you're still a pretty boy, whatever, you know, you know, you're still kind of an idol type, you know. So I'm just saying more of his, you know, again, just his style more so than his looks, which is kind of, you know, I guess that's what the problem is with Matsuyama, at least in my eyes, is that you'll always see him as something as Matsuyama the actor rather than, you know, as the character he's portraying, which is kind of, you know, not that great, unfortunately.
But we can talk a little bit about Sabu's direction. I think he's balancing the matters within this very busy movie well. I thought it was pretty clear as made. We're keeping up with quite a fast-moving story and what all the people's connections are to each other, and as the angel tries to, you know, prevent the script from actually happening and all of that. So I think there's quite good clarity, and he uses a variety of sort of tempo and moods stylistically, you know, again, from the yellow calm to commercial heaven to being dropped into the streets, and now there's a bunch of shaky cam and a lot more grainy footage at some points. So it's quite a busy movie visually, and also once you're into it, you realize that as commercial as it might seem watching the trailer, because it's a Sabu movie, you know it's not really general audience friendly through and through, because there's change in moods and style from scene to scene, moment to moment. There's sometimes gory violence in this movie as well. So, I mean, it's a good thing that he can operate on his own terms. You know, I think it's quite a hard sell to general audiences once you park them in seats and then you subject them to all of these moods at once. What do you think? Do you think general audiences would flat out reject something this busy?
Well, actually, you know, first, Ken, we should back up a little, because you forgot to put the little hook in the film as to why he actually ends up going from heaven to earth. Is that as a classic writer's moment here, he goes there for a woman. There's a woman that one of the screenwriters is basically writing a life out for, and then essentially he writes her death, which is she gets hit by a car. So the screenwriter tasks Matsuyama's character, or Chosuke, I should say, excuse me, to saving this person, because You know, what's interesting, I guess, let me back up even a little further, is that you did make some mention that these screenwriters are all writing on this large scroll, basically. And once the scroll moves from one writer to another, you can't change what you've written. You know, that in itself is kind of interesting. You know, it's
once you've established someone is a rock star, the next person will write that that person will open a ramen shop, you know,
right,
or whatever. Exactly. You know, right. that's
as does happen,
if we think so. Of it, it's true. It's kind right. of that free for all screenwriting.
So Chosuke ends up going to Earth to try to save this person, to try to change her destiny, which. Actually, I'm going to put an aside here that is very much an echo to of Wim Wenders' film Wings of Desire. You know, that's almost strictly taken from that. I'm sure Sabu must have taken influence from that.
Well, he knows a couple of Western movies based on this movie. We've got
a
big Titanic reference, and I think a Ghost reference in there if you look for it.
Right. So anyway, as far as style goes, I think it would be enough for people to at least a Japanese audience to keep up with. Japanese films, especially recent ones, are pretty frenetic, and it's for a reason. You know, I think that that's what the Japanese audience is somewhat used to, as far as comedy goes. Anyway, quick cuts, exaggerated reactions, you know, very quick, sharp barbs, that kind of thing is what the Japanese audience would be used to. So I think that wouldn't be a problem. But I do have a question about that as far as style is concerned. Did you feel that the film as a whole was a little over-stylized?
Yep, I do.
In some ways, I was thinking, wow, this is really lit really excellently, you know, and this looks like something almost out of like Argento or Bava or something. But then on the other hand, I was thinking, but to what end? You know, I mean, what does that, I mean, I don't really need that out of the film, you know. If anything, in some scenes, it's pretty distracting.
Yeah. You know that whole, like, artificial slow-mo step printing style that it does every now and again? I thought that was overdone. And there's things that go on repeat that don't need to be done over and over again. I realized that when he drops him into this parade, then that things are going to be confusing and therefore you can go handheld on us and all of that. But I thought there was a sort of rinse and repeat nature to some of the style. Like, okay, we're into this again, and now we're into it again. It did a 360 on us a couple of times, and that whole like step printing style, I always think looks fussy and artificial looking. It's not as, pardon me, but this is my view, as ugly looking as in Wong Kar Wai movies, but it's that kind of like artificial looking artsy-fartsy crap that...
But Wong Kar Wai kind of like made that his trademark. So, I mean, and I think he did it to good effect up until some films. I think he started overdoing it.
Whole damn films seem to be done that way.
Yeah, I mean, let's not get into like My Blueberry Nights, okay? That whole film is like half of it's like slow-mo, okay? But with Chosuke's journey, I just felt like there was a lot of unnecessary stylization, you know, lighting and stuff. And I thought it was great. You know, I just thought, you know, maybe it doesn't belong to this film. To me, this film really seems like it could be more of a down-to-earth type of film rather than being, I mean, it's...
Down-to-earth type of film. Yeah. I saw what you did there.
I know, right pun. I mean, there are, of course, these flights of fancy that Sabu's well known for, but it could have been a little more grounded.
I think so too, because once the sort of story, the wild story is established, you don't necessarily need to sort of like have an AV playtime with us all the time. Like once you establish everything again, that he becomes this miracle man because he can heal people. You know, he starts healing a boy who's been in a wheelchair all his life, and then people line up to be healed by him because Renosugi's character Tanada posts it online, so it's modern in that way. Once you post something on social media, the ripple starts, and
he even tweets it.
Yes, I tweeted, Angel Man is at my shop. Well, tweet that I'm not here then. See if they go away. A little funny sort of verbal banter between Renosugi and Matsuyama, so I appreciated that. I can, as I said, I can extract that there might be a serious sort of subtext that maybe not everybody is destined for miracles, because many are going to ask for miracles if a character like this comes to Earth, and despite being dealt a bad hand in life, maybe you'll, if we're talking about someone who's not deathly ill, maybe that's not something that is akin to a bad life. Maybe you'll persevere. I mean, I can extract that, and that's a good thought. But again, I've had fun saying that in prior movies that it might be serious, it might not be serious. Who cares? It's fun. Here, I'm not too sure of his intentions. It seems like he wants to emotionally hook us with, in particular, the relationship between Chasuke and the girl Yuri, and that didn't spike my emotional radar at all. I thought there was nothing there really. I thought that they had too little scenes together to really establish anything emotionally, hardcore emotionally, because the movie turns dark. It seems genuinely dark, particularly by the end. It seems downright punishing what happens. So there are, I think he wanted a little bit more emotional punch plus playful, but there he misses a target with a few notches here, and I think so anyway. So I'm cool. I have to decide, I guess, and I think he means something somewhat poignant here. He's not sort of like, hey, I don't mean anything, I'm Mr. Sarcasm. I think he means a little bit of something here. But what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I thought that was problematic too, is that, basically we have the two characters and there's supposed to be some romantic connection going on here. But, you know, there's so many characters in the film and the film takes so many turns that, you know, in the end, the Yuri character is weeping for Chasuke, you know, without going into great detail. You know, you feel like the film hasn't earned that, you know,
no.
Which is a problem. You know, I mean, it's supposed to be a real emotional moment, and I think it's a great image. The scene itself is excellent, but I just thought, well,
because that wasn't quirky cinema, exactly. That wasn't quirky, like absurdism or anything. No, that felt genuine. It wanted to be genuine, and did not feel like that path had been sort of,
Right, and when you think of the premise of the film, or part of the premise of the film, is that, you know, here are these screenwriters who are, you know, writing these stories, and these stories come off as being, you know, they've written these stories for so long that, you know, they become cliched because they've written so many lives of people, you know. And then there's this, you know, this big thing that you were laughing about, off air. You were laughing about, you know, avant-garde, you know, like there's this big push for these screenwriters to, because they've written these stories again and again and again, write something different, you know, and so.
And I love that they sort of talk with each other. Maybe that, like, is that avant-garde? Like, I think that's avant-garde. They're not really sure of what they're doing. So if he dies, is that avant-garde?
Right. Really? Oh, the funny thing, the funny one that I thought was, this one character says, he's writing his character is a police officer. He said, well, I'm going to give him a white face. It's like, is that avant-garde? And then, of course, that character, the police officer, appears later on the film as sort of like an assassin of sorts to Chasuke. But anyway, so to back up a little bit. So, you know, we have this idea of these screenwriters, you know, having written so many stories and so many lives that, you know, there's this push for them to be original or different or just something that spices up your work. You know, it's just like you do the same work every day, so why not do it a little differently just to make it more interesting for you, you know, like that kind of idea, you know. And I don't know if maybe Sabu meant to undermine himself, but it almost felt like his film was trying to be so different and so beyond your expectation, or at least different from your expectation, that in the moments where you need to have that emotional ground, you know, the romantic relationship, which is, I guess you could consider the cliched aspect of the story, that he hasn't earned that right to drop that in your lap and say, okay, now feel for these two people, you know? That's the kind of issue I had. Maybe he's using the screenwriter premise, you know, to sort of jab at his own story. So it's kind of like he's either being the joke or he is the joke. We're not sure which one exactly. You know, maybe Sabu himself is kind of laughing at that, you know, and saying, well, obviously I'm just joking around myself, you know. But I mean, that's kind of problematic because then, you know, it's just a private joke then, you know, no one else, you know, this is a film that people are going to watch who don't know what kind of person you are. So, you know, so for us, you know, viewers, we're just going to watch this and say, oh, okay, well, okay, I guess I'm supposed to feel for these people, but I really don't.
I mean, it's a good, and also, by the way, I forgot to say, he knows how to, even within a wild frame, actually get some genuine emotion going. I mean, you might remember from Postman Blues, there is this little romantic connection that is quite, you know, impactful by the end, you know, which is an ending you shouldn't spoil. But I that lingered, still lingers, because he just managed to sort of push the right buttons despite being a, you know, let's face it, that's a super wild time as well, a very absurd, silly film too. And yet he manages to sort of, oh, yeah.
Well, exactly, yeah. I mean, that Bozeman Blues remains, you know, my favorite of Sabu's films, and it's because of that grounding that makes it solid. But in Chasuke's journey, I don't really feel that, you know, it just kind of feels like, you know, it's almost like a pastiche film, you know, just a bunch of segments put together. And, you know, it's in, like I said, it's enjoyable. It's not terrible. It's certainly enjoyable. But in the end, I think when he really wants to hit you with that emotional punch, it just doesn't work.
No, it doesn't. I mean, it's a good varied time, and we are ready for it now, being sort of, let's say, seasoned viewers of Sabu cinema. We have experienced Monday in Postman Blues. We can take anything by this point. So So he is revisiting a sort of recurring style, but he is making fantasy at the same time, and that wasn't necessarily a repetition to me. I welcome a Sabu style movie. I think that's good fun, but it's not furthering him like a Miss Zombie did, which I thought was a nice, fresh sort of voice for him, you know, new mood and development. So yeah, might as well hit on just some minor highlights before I conclude my notes. I think that section where it starts to come to the forefront that he has Yakuza connections, Chaz, and the introduction of his sister, Wacko Chaco, or Wacko Chaco, or whatever, is another wonderful example of how the screenwriters in heaven just sort of write on the fly, because she is, as any other character, has had a sort of full life. She has done everything under the sun, you know, stranded on an island, eating seaweed, saved by an American soldier, went into the diet, she wrote a diet book based on seaweed, based on the sort of health properties of seaweed. And then when she turns up, she's this very confrontational sister. Almost seems like she has a gangster aura about her, too.
Well, but she has a reason, right? Because, you know, here the family is thinking that Chasuke has been dead all this time, and in fact, you know, he's right in front of them.
And they're not pleased, which was very amusing. Like, what do you mean you're alive? So again, simple, familiar comedic beats, nothing wrong at all, but to revisit them and make it part of the sort of the character banter. And thankfully, Matsuyama doesn't do anime-style reactions to the fact that, oh my god, I have to talk to mother now or anything. It's you know, he's in those moments quite well. And the movie even argues that voiceover plays a part of it, because Chaz needs to tell us what the life stories of all these people are. In montage form, yes, but we hear it as he's in the scenes as well. So it's a movie that does voiceover in a valid way, even though the movie has tons of characters. Arguably, maybe you didn't need to have that many characters and that many stories being told to us, but it always goes off, that little alarm clock, the voiceover, is going to be a problem. And I think that's a valid usage of it, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. When it got to be a little excessive, I was thinking, oh, is this really necessary? But it really is necessary, because it would take way too much time to be able to visually, you know, tell the story of all these different people. You just have to have someone come there and say, hey, this is how he grew up, this is what happened, bam, here he is now, right?
Because the actual visuals aren't directed as exposition. You know, it's the camera sort of lingers on Matsuyama, and then Sabu cuts to these often silly montage sections, because again, all these people have done so many contrasting things, been on the right side of the law, on the wrong side, been doing this and that and that, and now I'm here. Which again was amusing because these writers are just struggling, to just write anything, dude. We're gonna have to start over soon again. So just write that he ran into an iceberg, like that's from Titanic. So what? Like we need to write something. So, and that was actually quite amusing. I mean, a Titanic parody, like gee whiz, like how's that gonna play out in 2016? Turns out it was sort of amusing. I liked it.
Yeah, I think, you know, especially for Japanese audiences. I mean, Titanic was infinitely more popular.
They played for ages. I remember you telling me that. For years or longer than most parts of the world, I suppose.
Right. Mm-hmm. And now I think if you put in like a little reference, you know, it would come off as being kind of, you know, humorous, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think people would say like, "What?"
Yeah, it's certainly not the flavor of the month either. So it's not like everyone is doing that parody currently. At least it didn't parody any current superhero movies or anything like that. At least it went back in the catalog like a Deadpool reference. Look at me, I'm great. And even in Postman Blues, it goes back to Chungking Express, speaking of Wong Kar-wai and things like that. So. But buddy, I think that's the end of my notes. I'm happy I saw it, but I'm curious to see what comes next. And I had a little peek at the good old IMDb, and there's an in-production movie without any details at all currently called Happiness. And it's a movie, it's not a TV thing, but it seems like a movie. Don't know what it's about, but that's the next directorial effort. And as we discussed privately, he was one of the four directors on a TV series called Panic Inn that we mentioned as merely being announced. There was no details back then either. That's now released on DVD in Japan. So and Happiness is not part of Office Kitano, so it's not like their best buds for forever and ever now. So he jumps between companies and stuff. So I don't have anything else you want to mention?
No, not really. You know, I guess in the end, you know, I guess just like the title of the film, you know, Chasuke's journey, it's kind of like, for me, it's like, the journey was interesting. It's just the destination just was what kind of disappointed me.
By the way, I forgot to mention, his role isn't impactful, but it's always fun to see Susumu Terajima appear again, which he almost always does in a Sabu movie, playing Yakuza.
Yakuza, yeah. Yeah, to me, that I kind of almost felt like that was also like a little bit of a reference to, you know, this screenwriter premise, because what else would Susumu Terajima play? You know, of course, a Yakuza, you know, just like formula.
At least Ren Osugi got a different part this time around.
Right, right. Well, yeah, he kind of plays that kind of that person, kind of older, like kind, I guess you'd call the in Japanese, you know, you call the uncle character, you know.
Sort of wide-eyed, somewhat comedic uncle, mm-hmm. without being super broad or anything.
Right, yeah.
I like him. It's nice to see these characters, even if it's like Sabu Bingo, almost. But you know, no return for Shinichi Satsumi. Not yet, anyway. So maybe there's a reunion on the horizon sometime between a filmmaker and actor.
Possibly.
That's it. So as for availability, it's now available on Japanese DVD and Blu-ray with English subtitles. And beware that we're talking Japanese prices here. It is an expensive disc both for DVD and Blu-ray, but I thought it was nice that it actually did get English subtitles, considering that the international appeal is not great, actually. I mean, local releases do get English subtitles from time to time, which is great. And if not, fan subbers sometimes come to our aid, which has been true for past Sabu movies that were not English subtitled on Japanese DVD, Monday, Postman Blues, Danganronpa, and things like that. So, this one provided it for us, and it seemed like a good representation of the movie, even though I can't say if it is a good translation. Did you pick up on the fact that if this was nicely translated or not, or you didn't really listen that carefully?
No, it was very well translated. It was translated by Jason Gray and his company with his wife, Loaded Films. That they always do quality work. And I think I only saw one mistake, which was a typo, and it was pretty obvious typo too, but I can't remember exactly what it was. But when I saw it, I was like, whoops. But yeah, great job as usual.
Cool, cool. Well, that concludes the Sabu journey, I guess, unless we get some kind of Sabu fever later on down the road. But for now, I think this was the suitable movie to get in there, because we knew it was announced, we knew it was completed, and then we waited essentially another year before checking again, and lo and behold, it arrived English subtitle ready to be ready and served for us. So that was a nice touch for, I think it was Bandai who did the Blu-ray, and it's region all as well for you people who do pick it up. It's not locked for the Japanese Blu-ray region, which I think is B, but I might be wrong, but regardless, it is region all, so go get it if you're interested. So that's it, buddy. Let's sign off for this website exclusive bonus episode. Quick and easy and basic. We don't need to do any plugging or whore ourselves out or anything. It's just a hi, review, and goodbye.
For once.
So I've been Kennedy, and with me was Coffin John. So say bye, buddy.
Adios.